Welcome to another episode of GDPR Now, a podcast dedicated to GDPR and all things privacy. GDPR Now is brought to you by This is DPO. This episode is part two of a discussion around the ICO's recent paper on ad tech and real-time bidding. Taking part in the discussion are John Mitchison, Director of Policy and Compliance at the UK's Data and Marketing Association, Omar Oakes, Global Technology Editor, Campaign, Andy Houston, Product Director, Crimtan, and Mark Sherwood-Edwards, the host, that's me. Then the other thing that the ICO was very unhappy about was the lack of data protection impact assessments, DPIAs. They expected to have seen a lot of those. I kind of think, well, yes, but everyone's been doing this for years, so why suddenly now? I mean, I can see that you might be doing it on a regular basis. If there's a big shift in technology, maybe more geolocation from mobile phones. But if it's people are doing it for a while, should they have suddenly done it now? Should they have refreshed it?
I was a bit surprised that with the advent, you know, everyone knew that GDPR was coming. I was a bit surprised that more of this hadn't been done and that the ICO were characterizing it in this way. I think, by the way, part of the, going back to trying to gain consents, I think part of the problem on the publisher side has been just trying to play it too safe in terms of, oh, GDPR is coming. Oh, let's just kind of like bung everything in there. And what you end up with is a never-ending policy document that no one's able to read. And I think I think we're at the start of a process where hopefully people will get a lot better at actually defining their terms within the policy document. But, you know, I'm surprised that, you know, I would have thought it would be par for the course. If you knew GDPR was coming, then why not do these impact assessments?
No, that's a fair point. I'm not sure what's going to happen, though, much. It's slightly odd if you're the advertiser or the publisher now, because the ICO has given you the answer to what your DPI assessment is. It's high risk, I can't do it. You know, so
don't do it.
So, you know,
exactly.
So what are you going to do at that point?
Well, you know, it's funny you should
choose
say
to shoot yourself in the foot or don't, you know.
Because we were talking before the podcast started about, you know, so what are the options for, you know,
Well, let's talk about that.
Sensitive data, like actually just don't do it, you know. I mean, that is an option. And I think, you know, what I've tried to describe in terms of the RTB framework, for anyone who doesn't know it, is that actually there is a lot of value in the RTB framework for connecting advertisers and publishers with relevant advertising that has nothing to do with special categories and has nothing potentially to do to a sort of like a pseudonymous ID. You know, sort of if you've got a bus stop next to a Pret-a-Manger and they've got a special offer on a lunch, you know, sort of time offer, and they want to run it in a particular location on that bus stop at a particular, you know, sort of time to try and drive people into their store, then that is a use of the OpenRTB framework, and that is a use of non-personal data for relevant advertising. And I think there's a massive, you know, like piece there. I think one of the biggest challenges is going to be also the cookie treatment as well, because bringing on to another topic around, you know, sort of ICO's positioning on that, obviously, you know, when they talk about essential and non-essential cookies, which is what the EPR is going to do, they've actually put pretty much everything that marketing uses as non-essential, including analytics. And so that actually raises a massive question around attribution, which is something that all marketers strive to, you know.
Okay, attribution is, for people who don't know, is you spend $100 on advertising on 10 different channels. Which of those 10 has paid and which hasn't?
Yeah, absolutely right. So, you know, which of your marketing bucks has worked the best? And so how can I allocate and optimize my return on investment so that I get what, you know, more pounds out than I put pounds in type thing? Obviously, you know, sort of, cookies traditionally have been the lifeblood of attribution modeling within digital channels, and purely on actually an aggregated basis. But actually, because ICO is saying, well, actually, you know, analytics, you know, is a non-essential use of a cookie, that does have a lot of implications with how digital marketing is going to work in general.
Agree.
And I think it's already having an impact. I mean, you've seen recently that Google is talking about not allowing third-party cookies within the Chrome browser. And I think Apple is doing the same.
They've already done it with their ITP 2.2.
So the market is actually, you know, this is what GDPR is doing. It's changing the market conditions. And I think we're just at the start of a very long journey education, as we've already alluded to, is a big part of that. But it's actually, you know, changing the behaviour of the big tech platforms.
Well, I think there's two points there, and there's a big difference. There's a difference between Facebook and Google, both who made lots of money out of the advertising, and Apple, which doesn't. So Apple is...
Apple's anti-advertising, well, absolutely.
It's turning a fault into a feature. It's turning its lack of advertising revenue into a feature by going holier than thou as compared to Facebook and Google and the advertising
front. Tell that to App Store developers, but yeah, I take it. Well,
okay. No. And it, like, you know, but I mean, I think you're right. You've got the, you know, the fan group who, you know, do rely on advertising, and then you've got, you know, the other big technology player, Apple. And, you know, the reality is that the biggest growth in digital marketing spend at the moment is on mobile advertising. Now, if you look at the proliferation of iPhone in the UK markets, you know, you're looking at least, you know, 55-60%, if not, you know, sort of more for some of the retail, you know, sort of clients that we work with, some of the travel clients we work with, you're looking upwards 80%, you know, on their mobile. You know, that's a very real issue with, you know, how can I optimize and how can I attribute, you know, some marketing spend on mobile advertising back to what works well, because I can't really track it anymore.
Well, I just made a distinction between third-party cookies and analytic cookies, right? So back in, not that long ago, the Working Party 29, we said, yeah, analytic cookies, no prejudicial impact on privacy, they're okay. For some reason, they're now being seen as not okay. Reasons I can't quite understand, because actually a load balancing cookie is, according to the ICO, okay. A load balancing cookie allows the server to recognize your browser and spread all the different browsers more efficiently. But clearly a load balancing cookie is not strictly necessary. The servers will work fine without it, a bit clunky, well, fine. And equally the cookies that remember how much you've got in your shopping basket online aren't strictly necessary either. Right, because you can do it without. So there's a slightly self-serving choice
between non-essential and essential cookies. Absolutely, but I mean, you know, there is now this definition, and we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to work within those, you know, so definitions. But I mean, the implications, you know, are like far-reaching. I think, you know, obviously we're talking about real-time bidding here. And connecting advertisers with publishers through, you know, a framework that happens in 30 milliseconds. But actually, you know, a lot of the ICO statements, you know, around cookies actually impact a much broader range of, you know, marketing disciplines outside of RTB as well.
Well, your thought analytic cookies are fairly anodyne. I mean,
I think they tried to, you know, so back to the legitimate interest piece that we were talking about earlier. There was under GDPR, I think, this concept of aggregation versus individual analytical tracking. So if you aggregated data, so you processed some data and actually chucked it into like a bucket that, you know, didn't have any identifiable pseudonymous ID or anything else like that, then that was absolutely fine. I think the challenge is that even if you want to do it that way, you still got to have a cookie, you know, for that.
That's my point.
To kind of work.
Okay, so we've talked, we're at the beginning here, we're talking initially about what the ICO have been saying in its paper and then what the impact is going to be. So let's talk a bit, what do you think the impact is going to be now on people in this space? So the ICO has said it hasn't finished its analysis, it's going to come back in 6 months' time. There'll definitely be intervention. I think it's going to set out a timetable. You need to have sorted X by this time, Y by that time, and Z by some other further time. Personally, that I expect to see happening. I mean, does any else?
They've said 6 months, and by the end of that 6 months, they want to see significant movement.
Oh, I don't think that. Sorry, I've read that differently. I think they're doing more research. They'll come up in 6 months, and they'll intervene at 6 months' time.
Industry sweep in 6 months' time was what it said.
The ICO report generated a lot of headlines, but without actually seeming to have a lot of teeth behind it that I could see. I mean,
it wasn't intended to. It was a shot across the bows to everybody. Let everyone know this is what's coming.
Yeah, but actually, when you actually look at what's actually going to happen within 6 months, there's not a lot of there that I can see. And it seems that, you know, we were just saying about that we're at the start of a journey, perhaps. I think shot across the bow is a good way to put it. Who knows what they might say in 6 months' time. But they're definitely, I think, relying on conversations to happen behind the scenes, on the market to respond voluntarily, rather than wielding the stick at this point.
You know, I think GDPR was a reset button for everyone with regards to personal data legislation. You know, there'd been a lot of directives, not a lot of regulation, reset button. You know, there are, you know, still, you know, sort of everyone is, you know, going through a process of understanding the grey area a bit more, because with more and more clarification, and to a certain extent, you know, I think as well, you know, so this is also part of that whole reset, as you say, you know, sort of, and whereas GDPR is around personal data, we're now starting to get into what the EPR will cover when it gets, you know, sort of finally released through the courts, which is around non-essential, essential cookies, clarifying that definition, what you can and can't track.
Sorry to interrupt, but do you think, okay, so there's two primary issues. What's going to happen in the next year, 2 years, 3 years, RTP, will it survive, right? And there's two main issues it's got to solve the way I look at it. One is the consent, non-consent. Okay, let's say it gets consent, right? Let's say all the privacy notices are great, really clear, multi-layered. It gets consent for everything. That's a tick in the box, it's all right. But then you've got this problem at the back end, which you talked about. It's not like Visa, it's not controlled. It's the Wild West stroke dog's dinner of loads of people rushing around, swapping this data madly. And the ICO is not going to buy in any view, well, this is not really personal data, it's too abstract. Their view is personal data. So see, even if you get consents, you've still got this kind of ecology, zoology, whatever it is, in the backspace, which is so uncontrolled that it's very hard for the ICO to sign it off. How can that be changed so the ICO and the French regulator and the German regulators and everybody else is happy? Does anybody here have a view around that? I can't see how they do that.
I mean, I'm not technical like Andy here, but the only way that I could see that working is something like the Visa system. So everybody who wants to take part in that framework has to have gone through some kind of accreditation process. Yeah, something like that. You know, so you can't start handling people's data in an RTB system unless you come up to a particular standard and have agreed and gone through some kind of process. That's the only way that I could see that being fixed. And it's whether...
Are you planning to leave that, John? So this is your chance.
Whether industry can pull that off, I don't know if that's possible, you know.
Well, I mean, so part of the data protection impact assessments, I mean, we did, for GDPR, we did about 15 data protection impact assessments for all the different, you know, sort of pieces, you know, that we thought might be at risk. And yeah, you know, I think as part of that, you know, that is in effect yourself doing an audit. It's very easy then, you know, potentially for a regulatory body to come in and actually have a look at those and go, okay, well, actually, we don't think you're dealing with that data in a particular way. You need to fix that. Otherwise, you know, SIP, you can't be on our list. I mean, we already do, for instance, the JIP webs, anti-ad fraud, and the DTSG standard. I don't know whether you're familiar with those, but...
JIP webs and not the others.
Yeah, so I mean, these are basically making sure that we have the right principles and process for making sure that we are delivering ads for our clients, you know, sort of in a brand safe way. Yeah, so it's all about brand safety, effectively. You go through an audit process from an external regulatory body to do that. And once they've, you know, sort of passed you, you get your certificate and you can show that to, you know, sort of your clients. Go, look, we've gone through that process.
If you think about some of the lengths that companies have to go to, if somebody asks for a subject access request, you know, why did I receive this email? Right, people have to go through a subject access request. They might have to explain the profiling that they did in order to select them for that particular ad campaign and that kind of thing. You might have to have a framework in place that would allow somebody to say, why have I been served this ad? Mm-hmm. And then you would have to track back every company that their data was served with and how the bid was won and that kind of thing, so that they would be able to know all of the companies that their data was shared with. Because in order to give consent, you know, for consent to be valid, you have to be able to withdraw consent as well. So yep. If somebody's got your data, you can ask them to not have your data anymore. So if I gave consent for ads to be served on my browser and then I wanted to take it away, I would have to be able to withdraw it from all of the companies.
Actually, the way to do that is the TPS equivalent. For those who don't know, it's a telephone preference service. In the UK, if you don't want people calling you up, try and sell you things, you put your name down, I think, or the TPS is online, and they can't call you. In theory, they can't call you. that would be a lot more efficient than doing it on a per person basis. How it would actually work, I don't know, particularly if you're taking Andy's view that you don't actually know who the individuals are. So the individual said, I don't want ads. I mean, take a step back.
So we've tried to support the rights of individuals, you know, through the process. So the right to access, the right to correct, the right to port, the right to export, the right to be forgotten, the right to restrict processing. I think there was four or five or six. I can never remember in GDPR. But actually, we do have an icon on the ads that we serve. And that goes through to a particular page where we request to look at the browser to see if there's a cookie that might contain a pseudonymous ID, so that we can then say, well, actually, based on this pseudonymous ID in the browser, this is the information that informed that decision.
But could you identify every company that had been given that data then withdraw it?
So actually, the reason why you've got 450 people on the list is because you've got operators who might be doing a bid, right? So, and they're doing some decisioning based on contextual stuff or maybe a pseudonymous ID. So that's why there's a long list there. Actually, you know, sort of, so if you're asking, I guess, consent for relevant advertising, which is what we're trying to achieve, yeah, and what RTB is actually, you know, I think trying to achieve, yeah, that, you know, so if someone comes for, you know, a data request to us, we can point them towards this page and they can go in and see the data that we store about them, based on the ad that we've just served them. So it's a relationship, I guess.
Right. Is that the little blue triangle?
That's the ad choices one, mm-hmm, but we've actually developed a further one because the ad choices one is only opt-out. We wanted the facility to be able to either export their data and the right to be forgotten. So
if I see an ad, and what does your button look like?
It's a little icon in the top right-hand corner.
What is it icon shaped as?
It's just got an eye information.
Okay, I click on that. It gives me data and I can do a subject access request based on that if I want. Okay, that's interesting. Maybe in the show notes, we can put a link to that because actually that's quite interesting. That might be a way of doing it.
It might be a way, but everyone's got to, so back to a regulatory body, you know, let's agree what the right way is to do a subject, you know, access information request for RTB when using a pseudonymous ID. And everyone, you know, sort of like sign up to that. And that's part of the audit process. Do you fully support the rights of individuals? And there's a regulatory body who effectively goes in and says, okay, you're either going to get your certification or not get your certification based on, you know, sort of that. I guess like one of the biggest challenges is that there is a grey area around exactly what consent is, explicit versus implicit.
It's not so much what consent, when it's clear whether consent is required or not, it's not so much the consent.
Whether you're a processor or a controller.
Yeah, but the consent, yes or no consent, even though it's not binary, there's degrees, you know, as explicit nice, but there's degrees of consent. It's more exactly what have you consented to is often the trickier thing, I suspect. But I think that button is an interesting thing which should definitely help progress the discussion and make things a bit more intelligent and transparent and fixable. I think we're kind of coming to the end now. I think it's probably worth bearing in mind that actually the question is not ads or no ads. You're always going to get ads. The only question is, can they be more relevant or less relevant? And you're getting them for free. Well, you're getting the company services for free typically. So, and then what usage of data sits behind that? Mm. And I'm just going to go around the table now and see if there's anything anybody, I think we've kind of come to time really, if anybody else wants to add to this. And also there'll be some show notes at the end as part of this podcast, and I can put some other bits of information there that people might want to steer listeners to. So John, have you got anything else you'd like to finish off with?
I'll just finish up by saying I've been looking at this for quite a while. And there's this kind of weird stalemate going on at the moment where everybody knows that RTB doesn't come up to the required standards, but nobody's going to stop using it. And I think it was Simon McDougall who described that as, he describes it as market failure, where basically nobody can afford to get off the carousel, but they all know that they're not doing it right.
Okay, so McDougall is the head of technology for the ICO, yeah, or similar
and
job
that's
title.
When regulatory involvement has to take place, because they have to step in and basically stop what's going on, because nobody at the moment, it's not going to happen on its own.
But it's a quick digression. It's interesting that the ICO's waited so long to do that, because RTB is not a new thing.
It's not, but I think that the implementation of GDPR did change things quite a lot. People could get away with a lot more
beforehand.
And as Andy said, you know, the onset of e-privacy, even though heaven knows when it's going to be here, you know, the cookie rules will force changes, and they've brought those two things together now. And they've made it clear that something fundamental has to change in the system for it to come up to the right standard.
Omar, you next. Have you got any parting thoughts?
Well, a couple of things spring to mind. I mean, the first, spare a thought for poor marketers, because, you know, they've been, you know, in the last 15, 20 years, the advent of the internet and the opportunities that data collection has allowed, you know, they always hear, you know, get closer to your customer, get to know your customer more. And data collection and analysis has been the way that when they do that. And now you're seeing the backlash in terms of, well, this ecosystem has actually created a lot of issues that they didn't anticipate. But I come back to the point, we're still at the start of a very long journey. And also, I didn't want to mention the B word, but I feel like I have to. You know, Brexit is going to frankly have an impact on this, because assuming it happens, you know, people that know me, I've been saying for the last 3 years that Brexit is never going to happen because it's too difficult to do. But anyway, that's a different discussion. If we do leave the European Union, we're going to have to negotiate and sit within a different, or maybe the same, who knows, regulatory environment. And that's going to raise huge issues that we can't get away from either.
No, agreed. That'll be fun. Andy?
So, you know, I'm looking forward to a more transparent RTB framework and also process, and making sure that it's regulated in the way that it should be. So, you know, I think GDPR was the reset button for not just the RTB industry, but also, you know, many, many industries treating, you know, personal data. As long as everyone puts the customer everything, you know, at the center of everything they do, and they approach, you know, the way that they do business, privacy by design, that ultimately, you know, I think RTB will be around, but, you know, it's actually quite a young thing. It's only 9 years. And so I think there's probably, you know, going to be some big changes that we see over the next, you know, sort of 2 or 3 years, definitely.
Okay. Well, I'll put the contact details of the organizations on the show notes if anybody wants to follow up with them. But other than that, I think that brings us to end of another, the longest ever episode of GDPR Now. Thanks to our listeners for listening. Thanks to Omar, Andy and John for taking part. If you have any questions, just please email them to info@thisisdpo.co.uk. Equally, if you'd like to appear on a podcast or have topics you think we should be covering, please let us know. Contact details and other relevant information are available in the show notes. Thank you.